It's time for All Things Napa with your host, Lee W. Miller, a community leader, full-time realtor, and a serial networker passionate about promoting local businesses. Let's learn what's new in the Napa business scene today.
Good morning and happy New Year. Welcome to All Things Napa. We have not been on the air since, well, at least live anyway, since, actually my daughter's birthday, December 18th. And it is great to be back. I am especially stoked today just because of the newness of it. I had to be retrained and everything because I don't have very good memory on all the kinds of stuff. So really looking forward to talking to you today and sharing with you some local businesses, because that's what this show is all about. All Things Napa is we promote local businesses. I am a serial networker. I admit it. I don't go to any program for it because I like it. And that means that I love to connect businesses with each other and with clients. And it's all about growing businesses on a local basis here. And that's one of the things I love about this community. It's pretty easy to do that. So today in the studio, we have Kathy Becker, Calamity Jane's Trading Company. Kathy is the owner of this locally owned business in downtown Napa. And so we're going to be talking to Kathy here in just a little bit. And of course, we also have our regular featured guest, Bernie Narvaez, Narvaez Insurance. And speaking of Bernie, we thank Bernie for being a sponsor of the show, along with KBS Leaders and Kim Brown Sims. Kim will be in studio either next week or the following week, depending on her busy schedule. She's a regular featured guest on the show as well. And if you're new to the show, you may not know who the heck Lee W. Miller is. Well, when I'm not behind this microphone here, I'm a full-time realtor. I'm a past president of the Napa chapter of NORBAR. That's the Association of Realtors here in this area. I'm a founder of Napa Business Advantage. That's a business referral group. Yeah, it kind of feeds my addiction to connecting businesses. And if you are a local business owner, maybe you want to come to a meeting and check us out. We only meet on the first and third Tuesdays of each month, so only twice a month. And we're kind of like a BNI or a LATIP, except we are a lot less expensive. And the other thing that distinguishes us from those groups is we have quarterly mixers where we do a little fundraiser for a micro nonprofit. And that's just always a fun little event as well. All right. So I don't normally do this, but I want to plug a fundraiser. It's the prostate cancer fundraiser. It's going to be on April 25th. I know that's kind of a ways out, but a good friend of mine is in charge of this event. There's going to be a silent auction. There's going to be a live auction and a dinner. Of course there is. Those are components of every single fundraiser around. But this one is going to be at the Napa Valley Distillery. So that's going to be a little bit different. That'll be fun. So if you have any questions about that, want to know more about it, reach out to me at leewmiller@gmail.com or shoot me a text at 707-266-1585. All right. One of the things I like to do on every show is give you a little Napa nugget. Today's Napa nugget is Napa Valley was the very first AVA. And if you live in Napa, I think you have to know what AVA means, but that means American Viticulture Area. That's the very first one in California. Napa Valley was its own AVA. And this was way back in 1861, where pioneer winemaker Charles Krug founded the region's first commercial winery. So that is your Napa nugget. Now we have, I think it's either 15 or 16 AVAs within the Napa Valley. So just learned that yesterday, didn't we, Bernie? All right, with no further ado, let's bring on our first guest, Kathy Becker. Welcome.
Good morning, Lee. Thanks for having me today.
Well, we're happy to have you because not only are you a wonderful person, you are a Napa local business owner, and that is your ticket into sitting in that chair in front of that microphone.
Well, thank you. You know what? I've been very blessed in the last year to be able to operate my business downtown. It has been a goal of mine for a long time to bring something a little bit different to downtown, and we've been successful, and I'm proud to say we have a year behind us.
Wonderful. And I couldn't help but smile a little bit when you said something a little bit different, because your store is a little bit different, and it's just, I could spend hours in there just because it is so interesting. So before we get into that, though, let's let our listeners get to know Kathy Becker, the person, and then we'll talk more about your business.
Okay. Well, I grew up in Michigan, and I am a third generation retail. My grandfather started a small florist back in the 50s, and it's kind of taken off from there. We've grown, and the family business is still in operation today, so I have a long history in that. I've also done corporate retail at the management level, and also along with that, I have done a lot of fun things in my life. I've been a commercial beekeeper.
Oh, wow.
I had a cattle ranch. Just all kinds of stuff. So that's kind of where the play on Calamity Jane comes in.
Oh,
I've done
okay.
A lot of different things and many, many faces to the person.
Very, very interesting. Well, there goes one question that I had so the origin of the name Calamity Jane's is somewhat representative of your diverse experiences in life.
Yes, exactly.
Perfect.
Yep.
Perfect. All right. So I wonder how many other people were wondering what the origin of the name was.
I get that. I get asked that a lot.
No more.
Right. Yep.
All right. So you just said your roots and your family roots are in retail, but this is a completely separate business. You were just talking about your grandfather and various other members of your family have done retail, but there's no connection necessarily between them and Calamity Jane's.
No connection, just the experience in the background growing up. This is a complete different direction from my family's business. I wanted to bring a local spin on having, being able to represent local artists here in a different way than a gallery type setting. Like you said, it's nice to be able to come in and take a look around and kind of get lost. And that's what I want to create, because it's all about the story.
Right, right. So my hat is off to you for having started this business. As a person who's been in business myself, but always in an outwardly sales mode, it's hard for me to wrap my head around the concept of just opening a store and waiting for people to come in and waiting for business to conduct itself, because I've always had to go out and search and, you know, make it happen. So
right.
It's just a different form of business is all.
Right. And that's kind of on a daily basis. But more than that, we also work really hard behind the scenes doing goods and special orders for people. We do custom boots. We've done a full-length buffalo jacket for a customer this year, custom leather for some of the wineries and tasting rooms here in the valley, menu covers, that kind of thing. So it's not just about having the door open and waiting for that person to come in.
I am so glad you shared that. I didn't know that you offered all of these customized services and products for people.
We do, and that's going to be a big focus for this year to come. Get that out there more so people understand that, you know, you can have that custom pair of boots that's your very own, and they're handmade just to fit you. We're working with a custom hat maker right now to bring their line into the store, where we'll have some ready-made hats off the shelf, but I'll be able to fit you, and you can design it, the color, everything. So some different experiences that people may not have been able to have before.
Or probably may not have ever even considered. They never even thought about it.
Sure, exactly.
I mean, it reminds me of the Henry Ford quote that said, if I had asked the people what they wanted, they would have said a faster horse. And so not, you know, obviously not a car, but you are now providing things to people that they didn't know that they wanted or, you know, preferred.
And exactly. And I think there's a misconception when you talk about goods like that, that they're out of reach as far as budget. But that's one thing I really strive for, is to be able to deliver on both ends. So, you know, yeah, there's an additional cost to some of that, but you might be surprised in having that one piece that's that special kind of makes up the difference there.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and obviously your the skill, the people who are creating these things, you're not sending this to China and then bringing it back and selling it, right?
No.
You're employing local artisans and skilled people here locally, in addition to the employees of your store and yourself. So
right.
That's great.
And that's a big focus for us, too, is to keep things as local as possible. But like some of these custom goods, it's just not there. It's not here. But we can also say that we source things from the United States. So I have a leather guy in Montana. The hat guy is in Arizona. So we are, it might not be exactly local, but we're keeping it here.
Right. Well, and you're also helping the small business person in Montana and Arizona.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
Yeah, these aren't large businesses. Most of these are family businesses.
Wonderful. So, the other question that I had for you before we started was, you know, if you weren't doing this, what would you be doing, do you think?
That's tough. I've always enjoyed this part of being with the public in this way, bringing something different. I don't think I could do anything else.
Right.
This is what it's
well,
in my blood.
Especially because that's your family's, you know, work history is all been retail. So
yes, and for me to bring some of the artists that I've been blessed to be able to carry and tell their story, you know, maybe it's like some of the bronzes that I have by local artist Carl Siliaks here in town. Maybe it's not your thing, but once you hear his story and how they came to be, it's pretty neat. And I like just to be able to spend a few minutes with people and tell them how some of these goods came to be, because it is based in history, a lot of it.
What was the name that you just said?
Carl Siliaks.
Okay.
Yep, he's a local Napa guy. I've got several artists from Napa. Beverly Wilson, I carry some of her paintings. I have some of Christine George's work. It could just go on and on. And Mel Simpson and his pottery, all kinds of different things. And it's important to me to be able to share that and focus the talent we have right here.
Right.
It's amazing.
Right. Do you rotate those out, or is there room for other local artisans that say, hey, this sounds really great. I really like what I hear about Kathy. How maybe I need to reach out to her?
Some things we have to rotate out just because of space, but I'm always interested to meet new people and see if it is a fit for us.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, If you're just joining us, we're talking to Kathy Becker, and she owns Calamity Janes of Napa Valley. Kathy, how would someone go about reaching you?
So I can be reached at www.calamityjane.com, or also you can just give me a call at 707-286-9996. I do things the old-fashioned way. I like to talk to people. So I always appreciate the phone call.
Right, right. So I'm kind of putting you on the spot here a little bit, no intention, but tell me and our listeners, maybe in the first year, you've now completed 1 year of being in business, part of this vibrant downtown community. What was one of the big successes that you experienced in that first year for your business?
Well, not having a business downtown previously, I've seen a lot of growth downtown, which has really spurred me to kind of maybe think out of the box what I originally set out to do and bring some new, fresh things. I think for me, the biggest success was the people that I've met along the way and the ones that have stood behind me and been right there with me.
So if I can translate that, I would imagine most business owners, especially in a retail environment, you want to create this space, you want to create this vibe and this line of products and services, and you want to protect it and you want it to be yours and let it take off.
Right.
And then what you experienced in that first year is, hey, wait a minute, there's this neighbor over here and there's this other business over here, and there becomes this collaboration that you weren't necessarily expecting because you wanted your own domain and you wanted to grow your own domain. And now, through those relationships that you've developed, you all want the same thing, and therefore it's now a collaborative effort as opposed to individual businesses trying to do their own thing separately.
Yes, and that's going to be a big focus for our downtown merchants. We've gotten together a few times before the holidays, and we're going to resume that the end of this month. And we're going to try to come together as a local group of merchants that really want our town and our local families, our local people to understand, we want to see you downtown. We're trying to really create something special, not just for the tourists, it's for the locals as well. And we love it when you come by and say hi and let us know you're local. And then we like to see you come back and just to say hi and see what's changed. We, as a group, are going to really work hard to earn the trust of you local people to come down and be part of our downtown. It's important to us.
You know, that is why this is so important that you're on this show, because the tourists are not listening right now.
Right.
It's the locals that are listening.
Right.
And I hope that the degree of emotion that you just exhibited comes across to our listeners like it came across to me. I know how hard local business people work. I know how hard I work as an entrepreneur. I don't have a salary. I do tons and tons of work to try and win the favor of buyers and sellers. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes I do. And then they change their mind and they don't want to sell or they don't want to buy. And I don't get paid until a deal closes. And you invest so much money in paying the rent, buying the inventory, setting everything up, having all of your software systems in place and all of that. And you still don't make any money until somebody buys something.
Right.
And it's not somebody, it's a whole bunch of somebodies, because you have to pay all of those bills first, and then you get to keep what's left over. So Napa Valley, come downtown. Come and meet those business owners. The downtown rent is not inexpensive. So they're waiting for you. They've created this wonderful environment, and they hope that you come and see them. So
it's important. It's important for all of us. We're locals, and we're trying to support each other as business owners and provide something unique for our town. Napa's a pretty special place.
Yeah. And because it's special, and we know that it's special because of the sense of community and the, you know, we have each other's backs during natural disasters and things of that nature. We shouldn't wait until there's a natural disaster to support one another. It's business as usual. It should be just business as usual. So I really hope that there's somebody listening that this resonates with, and they're going to say, you know what, you're right. I'm not going to go to Amazon for that next thing. I'm going to go down to downtown Napa, walk up and down both sides of the street, check everything out, and make friends. Pop in to Calamity Jane's and say, hey, Kathy, I heard you on the radio. I'm local, and thanks for being here.
And we are diligently working towards creating a locals night as a group of merchants where we are going to open our doors. We're going to stay open late. We know you go to work. We know you drive a long way. We want to be there for our town. So we're really going to work towards that in this new year as a group.
Wonderful.
And it'll be great.
So there's more to come. Stay tuned in the coming weeks. Kathy's going to have more specifics on that as it continues to develop. It's in the early stages right now. So kind of the it takes a village applies to a whole bunch of independent small business people as well. Kathy Becker with Calamity Janes of Napa Valley, thank you so much for being here. And you listeners, we're going to take a short break, and we will be right back.
Services brings you 40 years of combined experience to protect small businesses. As an independent brokerage, Narvaez Insurance Services selects the most appropriate coverage for the best value for any insurance need from different insurance carriers. Business liability, workers' comp, umbrella policies for maximum protection, and of course, auto, home, renter's insurance. Also offering DMV services for your title transfers and renewing registration. With Narvaez Insurance Services, you can avoid the long lines at the DMV. Contact Narvaez Insurance Services for a competitive quote by calling 707-927-3204. Give Bernie Narvaez a call at 707-927-3204.
How can your organization benefit from KBS leaders? KBS Interim Executive and Leadership Consulting has more than 120 years of award-winning experience. The dream team at KBS Leaders brings diverse expertise to address the unique challenges and concerns of any organization. KBS Leaders can fill a vacant position, create a strategy, or enhance the effectiveness of leaders or a team. Led by Kim Brown Sims, KBS Leaders creates and transforms leaders of any type of organization, resulting in a more compassionate, collaborative, and focused workplace. Visit kbsleaders.com to learn more. Schedule a consultation to achieve the unimaginable.
Okay, welcome back to All Things Napa. That was Kathy Becker, and I am so glad that she came in. She is such a real and genuine person who obviously is very passionate about her business. You know, we've all heard the jokes about retail or what have you. Kathy is someone who is so passionate about her business that she got a little emotional talking about it. That's the kind of people that you want to do business with. And so I was just telling her during the commercial break, I did not want to gloss over the fact that she got a little emotional because it speaks volumes about her character. So go see Kathy at Calamity Jane's. All right. We have more All Things Napa coming at you. One of the things that I do is a real estate minute. And I prepared this real estate minute so long ago. I don't even know if this is the right one, but I don't have time to pre-read it. So, as you know, I'm a full-time realtor and a very, very, very part-time talk show host. So this week, the real estate minute is more homeowners are staying in their homes longer. The average house is being lived in for about 13 years before hitting the market. 5 years ago, or that's actually 5 years longer than it was just 10 years ago. So people are staying in their homes longer. That, along with low property taxes resulting from Proposition 13, is why we have such a shortage of housing. There are now 12 and a half homes for sale per 1,000 households. That's the lowest number on record in 37 years. And Prop 13 passed about 40 years ago. Coincidence? I don't think so. So elderly people that may want to downsize are deciding to stay put rather than selling because if they sell, they're going to incur higher property taxes. And they don't want to do that. So they're stuck in their large homes. I tongue in cheek, stuck. And the result is there's fewer homes on the market. So the solution to this would be if we were to allow people over a certain age, and I'm just kind of throwing a suggestion out. I don't have the authority to implement this, but if we look at everybody that's over 70, 75 years old, and they can't afford to move because their property taxes are going to increase so much, give them an exemption and let them retain their old property tax basis when they sell. This would benefit them as well as it would free up more homes on the market. And we're just going to have to reach out to Gavin Newsom and see if he'll accept such a suggestion from just a rookie guy. Bernie, welcome to the show. What do you think of that?
Good morning and Happy New Year.
What do you think of my suggestion to free up housing throughout the entire state?
We need to do that and we need to build more. But freeing up, you know, allowing people to downsize could be good for families that are growing. I know that the county had concerns about, you know, if older people are selling, we'll have a population that's coming in that's looking to retire. So it may not always be a younger family or working family. So
right.
There's always, you know, that side of it, that's a concern.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, but we can't very well say, oh, you want to move to Napa? You have to be between this age and this age.
No, you cannot do that. No,
and have 1.2 children. And
right. No, that's the challenge. I mean, we don't want to do that, but it creates a challenge of if we want to, you know, one of the things that I wanted to talk about today, and I'll bring it up now, is, you know, we're not growing. Our population is decreasing, and we're seeing our a lot of workers not living here.
Right.
So that's causing even more of an issue in our community. That's concerning, you know, for me, it concerns our future tax base or population, our sense of community, things like that. So housing is not just that we have a housing crisis. It's a ripple effect across the community.
And, you know, I did see that article about Napa's population declined since the last census. And some people were saying, well, that's because of the fires, and there's so many people that had to move out of the county or what have you. But then, lo and behold, we now know from recent reports that California's population is declining. And we've always been the state that everybody wants to come to from all over the world, really, but especially the U.S. And, you know, next door is not exactly an ideal place to get information, but the comments that I've seen about, I am so fed up with this or that and government
to
or
get gauged to understand people's current mood, current frustration.
Right, right. It gets a little bit too nutty though when they say, I saw a suspicious looking man with a hoodie. Beware. You know, what is your reason for posting that? I can say this now, but I can't say that on Nextdoor. I type so many responses to things and then delete them.
Like me, I don't type. When I type in, redraft it several times without sending it. I'm like, oh, let me.
Because it's therapeutic, right? It's therapeutic. So, but the point is, they're saying that they are leaving California because they're fed up with, and then fill in the blank, whether it's political or natural disasters or whatever it is, people are leaving our state. It's probably mostly taxes. It's tax related that I think is the most common theme. So,
well, you know, the other thing is there was a report by California Housing Partnership. They put out this newsletter, the Bay Area's Housing Emergency Update. So it gives us more of a regional snapshot of the housing situation. And I just want to share a little bit of the data. One thing is, compared to Marin, Alameda, San Francisco, Santa Clara, Napa, for without new policies or investments, for teachers, for Regents teachers, they would have to earn $8,100 to be able to afford to live in Napa.
$8,100 a month.
Month, right. And currently the average is $2,700.
Wow.
So it's emergency is a key word in this report.
Right.
You know, I mean, we know what's going on with the schools.
Right.
We're closing schools. Enrollment is declining and we're not going to attract more teachers and families are leaving. So it kind of paints a picture of where we're headed.
And what's the solution?
Well, there's a few different solutions. One is, if you look at Measure F that passed in the last election, it's supposed to create, it's going to create revenue for affordable housing, for the workforce, and also includes programs and services. It hasn't been implemented yet. I haven't seen a plan for that quite yet, but there is going to be funds there. I know that aside from housing, childcare is a big cost in the community for young families, right? And when I look at Measure F and it says programs and services, I wonder if there's opportunity there to take a look at that and see if we can try and lower the cost of living, right? Because, you know, I know my wife and I, we talked about, you know, she works part-time. She loves her job. And there's opportunity sometimes to go full-time. So there's that one part is, you know, she'll spend less time with the girls, with her two daughters, or she goes full-time. And then the cost of childcare in addition to that. So
right.
that keeps her from going to full-time job, and her employer, you know, doesn't have another full-time worker. They have to hire somebody else for part-time, or loses out on that employee.
Right. Well, I remember many, many years ago when my wife was a stay-at-home mom, and then, you know, we talked about having her work part-time. Well, it would be helpful for her to have some more adult interaction, but the money was basically whatever she earned was going to childcare. So it was like, well, this doesn't make any sense.
Right. So
financial sense.
Exactly. And we review that every few months and it hasn't really, the meter on that has not changed. And I was talking to somebody that recently had a kid, they're about to, and they're looking at childcare and the waiting list is 11 months.
Wow.
So, you know, do the math there. Yeah. So if you're planning to have kids, you know, get on the waiting list now if you plan to have childcare.
I've seen that in movies for trying to get into the special schools or whatever, but wow, that's just for childcare.
And so the first few years...
There's a business opportunity right there, people.
There's
a huge business opportunity.
Yeah, and that has, you know, the business opportunity I see is maybe more childcare at homes. You know, looking at, see how we can encourage and support that. As a community or the city, to see if we can encourage that, because, you know, early child development is very important.
Yes.
You know, being with the parent, having a positive environment with somebody else that's taking care of those children. So it's also a very important conversation to have if we are going to increase child access to child care and other programs for children.
Right. And with our increasing the silver tsunami, where we have assisted living facilities left and right, and we're going to need more and more of those, I'm just throwing this out. The child care, we bring those to the assisted living facility and let them interact with one another, and everybody wins.
That's an interesting thought. You know,
assisted living, but homes for elderly.
Well, look, my father-in-law, a couple days a week, takes care of my oldest.
Uh-huh.
And it's wonderful to see them both. Oh, keep each other busy. He's retired.
Both of them are being enriched from that interaction.
They go on walks every day, you know, and they'll walk for an hour or so. And they're just out there, you know, breathing fresh air, bonding. And they're at different, you know, points in their lives. One's starting, one's lived for quite some time.
Right.
And there's definitely benefits to that. So yeah. I do see what you're saying.
Yeah.
And that's very creative.
You take care of that one. write that down.
Okay. Another thing, you got Gavin Newsom on speed dial, or mayor? Let's tell him.
When Bernie's mayor, then he'll address that.
I don't know. I got business to run too. You know, so.
Yeah. All right. I wanted to talk about AB5, and I know that was on your list, particularly. I just saw that a judge ruled that no, there are not going to be any exemptions. There's not going to be any flexibility. I didn't have a chance to read the article.
I didn't either.
Okay. But you saw that? Because there's some major, major problems. I understand that they were going after Uber and Lyft. That was the primary objective. But my daughter's business, who does the walking food tours, I'm one of her... independent contractors. I work 3 hours a week, and for that law to require that I become an employee and have withholdings and workers' comp and for 3 hours a week is nuts.
You know, so it all started with a transportation company, Dymex, that basically subcontracted everybody. They took it over the line and basically made everybody independent contractors, right? They've kind of abused the gray line that Kaufman set for them.
Okay.
And that really that's what really brought this to attention.
Right.
And then you take Uber and Lyft and add all that in, and now it's just been codified. It just got codified at the beginning of this year, where before it was ruled, you know, now you have to follow the
but
ABC
test. But it's supposedly already in effect
right now.
The beginning of it just became clarified.
Codified, yeah. Well, it's been...
Oh, I thought you said clarified.
Well, sorry, codified. So it's law.
Okay.
Where before it was ruled in the court system, right? Now, which, you know, created a precedent for law, but now it's actually in the books as legally.
Right.
So... For those that don't know what you have to do, first of all, it's employer's responsibility to make it clear that they're not an employee. So you assume that they're an employee until you can prove it, right? So you hire somebody, they're an employee, unless they're free. There's three parts. They're free from a company's control. They work outside of the company's core business, have independent enterprises performing the same type of work.
Okay, that's interesting, because the I'll reference something that Barry brought up. The guitar player that plays at a winery occasionally, or Kathy has a guitar player sitting out in front to draw customers in on a Friday evening, that guitar player certainly doesn't have to be an employee of Calamity Jane's.
Right.
Although one could argue that, well, no, the core business is to bring people in the store and have them buy. He's now performing that function. So,
well, then it comes to the agreement between the parties and how that is worded. So you want to talk to a business lawyer. I mean, there's opportunity for other professionals to get some business there. But that when it comes down to it, and you want to prove to whichever party, the state or the insurance company, that they are, in fact, the independent contractor, they're going to say, where's that contract? Where's that agreement, the contract between you and the other party that states they're free from company's control? So basically, the contract dictates their activities, their responsibilities, and you can't tell them to do anything else other than that because you're paying for that service only.
Well, there is a certain amount, you know, he has to play when she tells him to play. I have to do the tour at the scheduled time of the walking food tour to each, you know, establishment. So there is some control. I can't just show up whenever I want and walk from store to store without the guests, you know, so
there's that confusion, but you want to dictate on the contract from 7 to 9, I'm going to play 6 or 7 songs. Right. And I'm going to take a break for 30 minutes. And after that, I'm charging you this amount. And after that, I'm done. And that's it.
Okay.
So you want to be as clear as possible. So there's no misunderstanding.
Right.
Really, what happens is when you hire an individual, people say, well, I'll give them 1099 and they're independent contractors. I mean, the insurance companies and workers' companies have been dealing with this for years, even before AB 5. Right. I've been having this conversation for years with employers saying, are they an independent contractor or are they an employee? And I basically approach it the same way. So for me, this isn't any different. It's educating and enforcing to the business community, this is what you really need to do.
Okay.
But it's not, to insurance companies, it's not that new. It just, it gives them more tools to enforce their policies.
Okay. So you don't think it's going to be that big of a deal? You think that?
No, it will be for certain industries. I haven't read the article that you mentioned about the exemptions. I mean, if you look at barbershops that rent out chairs, if you look at realtors, right? That community is going to be, you know, affected by that. There's a few other businesses. I'm not sure if lawyers or a few other professional businesses that, you know, the individuals are individually licensed professional that's hired by somebody else in the same industry to perform a service. Now, you know, they're not outside the company's core business, right? But they're not necessarily employed because they're performing their professional service. You know, even if you have a contract, there is, you know, conflicting information there on the regulation. So those exemptions were very important.
So I thought that realtors were going to be impacted, and my daughter has done way more research on this than I have, and she said, no, realtors are exempt.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, but I haven't read the article that you mentioned, so I don't know if
I read the one. We read the one, but now the first one a couple of days ago, but then the one that said the judge said there will be no exemptions, I haven't read that one.
I haven't either. Okay. So we'll see if there are no exemptions, what it's going to do to realtors and barbershops, you know, those businesses.
Yeah. And I know somebody that was in the hair salon business, and this didn't just come out of nowhere. AB 5 was written over a year ago, I think, and they got wind of it and they sold their business. Just they don't want to be in the hair salon business anymore when you factor in all of those additional costs that they're going to incur.
Well, this is where you want to talk to a business lawyer, because this is where you can get creative with business structures and different entities. That the entity that rents out the chairs is different than the barber that would have owned the business.
Oh, so you insert a middleman kind of.
There's different strategies. I mean, but I'm not giving advice here. I'm just saying that there's ways to try to create different entities that to cover different liabilities.
Right.
Right. And that's why I'm saying refer to a person that deals in the legal system to see if you can structure it such a way that you can still have a successful business, that you can employ people correctly and legally, and that you follow this new law.
See, and just you saying that just builds up a little ire in me that we business people have to come up with some creative way to get around some ridiculous government. And that goes back to, I'm out. I'm leaving California. You are overregulating so much, you know.
But on the other hand, Lee, I've dealt with some business owners that are not responsible. They're really abusing the system, unfortunately, and it creates a problem for the business owners. They're trying to do it the right way.
I get that.
And it's really those that really ruin it for everybody else that really take advantage of employees.
The solution is to go after the bad guys, not change the entire rules of the game of capitalism.
Yeah, you know, and it's kind of been a story for a long time for businesses. You have to be able to keep up with regulations. I mean, the Privacy Act that just came also in this year for large businesses, if you are, and this has to do with cyber liability, right? And personal information. If you hold personal information from clients and that is compromised, you're responsible for that cost, for identity, for reimbursement to credit card companies. But now it's been codified also at the beginning of this year. So that means that if you hold thousands of data or if you use personal information for your revenue, so if you're sending personal information, then you have to have certain guidelines you have to follow. If not, you can get fined, I believe it's like $7,500 per record for these large companies. Now, as a consumer, you can request all the information that they have of you that they've used for the last year, and you have to legally provide it. So there's a whole other element to business ownership that they have to be aware of if you are holding any data from customers.
And most any online business is doing that,
credit card transactions.
Right.
You're taking their information. That has, that gets digitally stored and transacted into your system. That has credit card information, that's personal information, that has name, right, billing address. That right there, it is already one element of a requirement that you have to have. So, you know, as an insurance professional, cyber liability is very important. And it's becoming more and more inexpensive to get. Now, if you're doing transactions with a credit card.
It's cyber insurance?
Cyber insurance, right. So it's two things. It protects you if your business and as a business owner, your identity is compromised, and to your liability for exposing somebody else's information.
Okay.
Whether you're hacked or by mistake leave something out and somebody takes it.
And here's where I see that going. Okay, so because of this, somebody's said, hey, I'm going to do cyber insurance. And so Kathy has all these credit card records because of people coming in and buying stuff. Somehow that information is leaked. Kathy breathes a sigh of relief that she has cyber insurance. And then the cyber insurance company says, well, let me take a look at everything. Oh, well, you didn't do X, Y, and Z. Therefore, your policy is not going to pay the benefit because there was this little nuance that you didn't do. I just see.
But that's with any policy. There's conditions. There's responsibilities for either party. So that's just
when they're created to intentionally get out of paying. That's. Where it bothers me.
That has to do with the kind of insurance company you choose. I choose right. Which companies I work with. So you look at the exclusions. I always tell people, go and look at the exclusions first before you look anywhere else in your policy, and you're going to find out what's not covered. That way there's no question. Everything else, then you look at the verbiage, how it's written. If it's ambiguous, it's going to be in favor of the client, right? Then look at sublimits. So you have your general limits and then you have sublimits. Those sublimits create a underlying limit to the coverage, because a lot of policies doesn't cover just one thing. It covers a lot of things. And some people think, well, I got insurance, everything's covered. It's not. There are sublimits, there are exclusions, and every policy written, it could be written a little bit different to fit the company's appetite, what they're right. looking to do.
Well, we could talk about that alone for right. an entire hour, but I know that there's contractors out there that say, oh, I've got workers' comp. He's got workers' comp on himself only. So anybody says, hey, I need to see your workers' comp, he shows it. But his guys, all of his workers, are not covered because he's leveraging a loophole. And it's basically fraudulent. But that guy should be gone after, as opposed to changing everything the way everybody does.
So. Well, the person would have a workers' comp in effect. They won't cover the owner. The workers' comp is not designed for the owner unless it's a corporation. Then you can elect to include the officers. But really what happens is they don't report the payroll. So they don't have to pay based on the payroll. So they can have 10 employees and say, I have three, right? But when it gets audited, that's when they need to provide and you know, justify what they're reporting.
Audited by the IRS?
Insurance company.
Oh, by insurance company.
Insurance company takes fraud very seriously. So I've had people, and you know, I've been in business since 2007, and I've dealt with a lot of business owners. Some of them have tried to kind of steer one way and the other, and they weren't able to provide what they reported, and they got hit.
Right.
You know, and some people try and take the chance. Some people take the chance. Some businesses do.
Right.
And, you know, it costs them.
Right. All right. Wow, that hour flew by. We are out of time. So, Kathy Becker, thank you once again for being here.
Thank you.
Bernie, as usual, you are a wealth of information, both in community affairs and in insurance and business. We appreciate you being here in studio and appreciate you being a sponsor of All Things Napa.
Thank you for having me.
Ladies and gentlemen, remember to live your life as if your legacy matters, because it does. Have a great rest of your day.
Narvaez Insurance Services brings you 40 years of combined experience to protect small businesses. As an independent brokerage, Narvaez Insurance Services selects the most appropriate coverage for the best value for any insurance need from different insurance carriers. Business liability, workers' comp, umbrella policies for maximum protection, and of course, auto, home, renters insurance. Also offering DMV services for your title transfers and renewing registration. With Narvaez Insurance Services, you can avoid the long lines at the DMV. Contact Narvaez Insurance Services for a competitive quote by calling 707-927-3204. Give Bernie Narvaez a call at 707-927-3204.
How can your organization benefit from KBS leaders? KBS Interim Executive and Leadership Consulting has more than 120 years of award-winning experience. The dream team at KBS Leaders brings diverse expertise to address the unique challenges and concerns of any organization. KBS Leaders can fill a vacant position, create a strategy, or enhance the effectiveness of leaders or a team. Led by Kim Brown Sims, KBS Leaders creates and transforms leaders of any type of organization, resulting in a more compassionate, collaborative, and focused workplace. Visit kbsleaders.com to learn more. Schedule a consultation to achieve the unimaginable.